Right now, new and returning vidIQ customers can buy 1 month of vidIQ and get the second month free. This offer is going on until July 31st and can be used towards a purchase of either a pro or boost level account. All you have to do is visit vidIQ.com/bonus. If you've been looking to unlock our full suite of tools, now is a great time. You have until July 31st, vidIQ.com/bonus. Managing a YouTube channel just in itself is a lot of work. As your channel grows, though, the desire to start branching out into other bits of social media, maybe as a part of the overall brand for your channel, they're pretty tempting. Depending on what you do, you might make use of Instagram or Facebook or TikTok. And today's guest understands that and the struggles that go along with it. So if part of your strategy involves social media, and I imagine it does, I think you'll get a lot out of today.
Welcome to Tube Talk, the show dedicated to helping you become a better video creator so you can get more views, subscribers, and build your audience. Brought to you by vidIQ. Download for free at vidIQ.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Tube Talk podcast. I am Dan Carson, joined as always by Rob Wilson.
Hello, Dan. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm fantastic, and hopefully all of our audience is as well.
I want to talk about our guest today, Ben Levitt. Thank you so much for being here. We're very excited to talk to you about YouTube and social media.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I've listened to the show for a long time, so it's really cool to be on the other side now.
Well, we appreciate that. Real quick, for anyone who doesn't know, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do over on YouTube and the internet at large.
For sure. So I'm a social media strategist, so I make content over on my channel dedicated to helping people leverage social media to grow a platform, a brand, or a business online through the vehicles of YouTube, Instagram, and other social media platforms. So if you're looking to grow on social, I like to help you do it.
So your channel essentially is more of, it kind of coaches people through different social media platforms and the best way to leverage those.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd say if I had to focus on two, it's Instagram and YouTube, but I like to touch on the things that are changing in social media, trends that come up, things of that nature.
I've got an interesting extension question there, Ben. What would you say is your target audience? So, for example, vidIQ, we feel as if we have quite a broad YouTube education base, but I'm guessing for you, maybe your target audience might be more individual clients. So maybe perhaps a little older, more income in that aspect. But yeah, please do share.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say you hit the nail pretty well right on the head there. I think that when I look at my demographics, it does skew usually like 24 to like 30-ish range, a little bit older. And then they are usually doing it for businesses or for their own initiatives. So either starting a project or trying to help with the team that they're currently on. So they come to my content to try to bring that back to their existing business. But yeah, I'd say you got it pretty well right on the head there.
Get us started. I guess, to me, Instagram and YouTube are just two totally different things. You know, one's kind of a photo sharing platform, one's obviously for video. Although I guess the YouTube community tab lets you do photos and Instagram does have video platforms, or video in it. What would you say are like the major differences you've seen between your clients? Like, who are your Instagram users and how are they different from your YouTube folks?
Yeah. So I think they definitely are very different platforms for what they serve. And I think that they both are equally valid for what they do really well, but they also do come with their own challenges as well. So I think a lot of people are trying to do both, but I think there's a lot of more people who start with Instagram because there's just less barriers to entry. It's a lot easier to just make something on Canva in a few minutes or post a photo of yourself rather than make a whole dedicated video and then tackle that whole beast of getting behind the camera, getting comfortable in front of the camera and all that. So I think a lot of business owners are typically the Instagram people who are looking to build a message and a brand there. And then a lot of the personal brand people will, I think, start with the Instagram and then want and see the value of YouTube. And that's largely what I did as well, is the level of connection that you can build on YouTube is unlike anything else. So they do feed off each other really well. I think they can act for even your existing audience for different purposes. Like, I know that my top YouTube fans are who follows me on Instagram. So I know to conduct with them that way. And that's very powerful as well.
I see. So let's say, you know, you're a YouTuber just starting out and you're toying with the idea of expanding onto other social platforms. When would you say, as a YouTuber, when would you say the right time is to start playing around with other platforms? And what do you think those other platforms even are? Because I'm sure there are other opinions about whether or not, say, Twitter is a great place as a YouTuber or Instagram or what have you.
So I think to answer that question, it would have to be specific to your kind of content. I think each of them would lend to a better place where I would send someone, where I think it could be a better accent or accompany their YouTube strategy. I think they all do serve great purposes. Like TikTok is an emerging platform and there's huge reach there, but the level of connection is just so different from YouTube. So you can grow an audience very quickly over there, but the level of connection is going to be so greatly different from what you could get via that long form video content. So I think it really comes down to the kind of content that you want to be making and what kind of people are consuming that. Like even amongst social media consumers, the demographics do skew in terms of how much time they spend on different platforms. So I think understanding your audience is going to be very, very important. And then the intention that you want to be serving or doing with your time on the other platform and understanding why you're there and the goal that you're trying to get out of it. That's going to help you dictate where you should be and where time should be spent.
Yeah. I've always kind of tried to impart on people that you should focus on one for now, you know, and you don't want to pull your focus, you know, too far in another direction. I think that does speak to that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think I get asked that question all the time about, because a lot, Gary Vee is one of the people who's always like, you should be on every platform. And I think in theory, that's true. But in practice, that's just not practical. Like the majority of people can't do every platform right. I would rather someone do one platform right than four or five wrong or half-heartedly. So I think it comes down to getting really comfortable within one and understanding that there's a demand or a benefit from doing both. Because if you're huge on YouTube and you're focusing solely on that, and then you think, hey, I want to do Instagram, if it takes away from what was working on YouTube, then you shouldn't do that as a detriment to the other. I think making sure that's a complementary addition and not a detractor is very, very important.
I'm going to ask this question, even though I hate being asked it myself. Is there an inflection point where you start to think I should be on other social media platforms? For example, I'm going to pluck a number out of here. It might be 10,000 followers on Instagram. Or when people start to ask you, are you on YouTube or are you on Twitter? Is there any telltale signs of when you maybe should start to expand your social reach?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think if people are looking for a specific number, that's definitely tough. But if you grew an organic following of up to 10,000 plus people on Instagram and you have a very tight connection with your community, you're doing yourself a disservice not getting on YouTube because of what YouTube allows you to do. There's a lot of people in my niche who have a lot bigger following on an Instagram, but it doesn't allow them to do the things they want from a business perspective because long form content is just so much more intimate than a quick post that is in a sea of so many others. So if you've built that bit of authority for yourself, you're doing yourself a disservice not bringing it over to YouTube and getting yourself a bit of a head start because you can already send them right there. And if you have people asking if you're on there, then that should be a huge light bulb moment that, yeah, you probably should be on there and then start figuring that thing out with the advantage of already having an existing audience and some leverage there that way.
And then just going back to maybe Gary Vee for a second, because he's everywhere, because he has a team behind him. If, for example, you have built your audience up on Instagram and then you want to start to branch out onto YouTube, do you recommend, I guess, outsourcing to some extent in that you might bring in a YouTube expert to create YouTube content or vice versa? Or should that, I guess, the hero of whatever it is, whatever channel or handle you have, should they try and stay true to their own content for as long as possible? Or does it depend on the person?
Yeah, so again, I'm probably giving the answer people don't want to hear, but it definitely depends on the person. I know for myself, I can still stay true to what I'm trying to do while outsourcing the parts that I'm not good at. So like I have zero graphic design skill, zero video editing skill. I did it to a point, but once I built the business up to a point where I could afford to outsource that stuff, then that allowed me to actually create more and create more freely, which then became more of a benefit. I think you should focus on the things that you enjoy doing and that you're good at and outsource the things that you can't when you can. I think don't like walk before you run. People try to outsource everything before they even figure out how these things work. And I think that's a huge detriment that you can do. Because a lot of people, even if they can find a cheap editor, they instantly think, oh, I should be doing that. But there is a lot of value in understanding what goes into making a video, learning that whole process, understanding how to put together a video, a hook, all of these things. And you don't know that if you aren't put through the fire and have to really learn on the run. So I do think there's value in that. And then once you get to a point where it's kind of a self-sustaining machine, or at least you have some leverage and some momentum, then look into outsourcing the parts where are real bottlenecks for you. And I knew for me, that was video editing. That was the graphic design, the stuff that I could do. But I would say realistically, I was probably like a 5 or a 6 out of 10. And I could probably pay someone who's a 9 or a 10 out of 10 and just make that whole process easier.
Final question, Dan, and I'll throw it back to you. Just on the concept of outsourcing then, are there any ballpark costs that you can attribute to, say, running a YouTube channel through outsourcing? For example, would it cost around about $200 for an editor to do all of your work per month? Would it cost $50 a month for somebody to edit your photos and post on Instagram? I'm just curious as to what the general costs are for different platforms if you were going to get help to do it.
Yeah, that's a question that I get all the time. And I have people on my team who definitely specialize in different things. A route you can go is to try to find someone who can do a few of those things at once and try to lump that into one sum. That can work, but sometimes you're going to find that you're better served having people who are specialized, because they're going to be very good at that one or two things. So you really have to decide what you want to do. And it also depends where you're sourcing the person from. Like, is this from a Fiverr? Is this an ongoing relationship? Maybe someone you source from Upwork? Is this a VA from overseas? That will really dictate pricing. And then that too should also dictate your expectation or how much you're going to have to be involved. The first addition that I made to my content team was hiring a VA overseas. And with that, they had the skills that I needed, but I had to be very patient and engaged early on to ensure that we created a standard set of procedures so that now it can flow pretty smoothly for when they do the work. But you also have to understand that, like, the money that you're going to save, you're going to have to give back in your time. So that really depends for you. The first VA I hired, I think I was paying $500 USD a month, and they handled all of my video editing and thumbnail designs for the month. They were basically like a full-time employee just overseas. So quite affordable if you're bumping out a lot of content, not if you're not. But it really depends from there. I'd say that's a great starting point, and that's going to get you someone who is equipped at video editing. You may have to give them some assistance, and then they're only going to get better with time. But if you want a more specialized person, naturally it's going to cost more money.
This episode of Tube Talk is brought to you by the vidIQ mobile app. You can download it for free on the Android or iOS app stores. And it's here to help you do things like keep track of your competition, research your next video idea, optimize videos you've already posted, and more, all on the go. This is the perfect app to have literally in your back pocket while you're out and about and you find yourself with a few free extra minutes. Having the opportunity to sit down and optimize your latest video or research ideas for your upcoming video can be a game changer and save you a bunch of time as you work to create more YouTube content. Again, you can download the vidIQ mobile app for free on Android or iOS. Just search for vidIQ. I want to quickly move on to something that has been kind of eating at me. There's Clubhouse now, right? And then there's all these social platforms trying to jump on that train. Real quick, let's start here. What are your thoughts on this new, like, emerging style of social media?
So are you talking about Clubhouse specifically?
Clubhouse specifically, and I suppose apps like it. Just the idea of sitting down, a whole bunch of people sitting down together on a stage and having a discussion, inviting people up.
Do they have a collective term yet, like direct networking, audio conferencing?
Yeah, I don't know if they've coined it yet, but I think it obviously is something that was the right time, right place during COVID that just people were desperately needing, and I think that played a massive role in its quick success and the fact that it became so cool. And then the invite-only functionality, that definitely emphasized the whole cool piece. And you can't really buy cool. I guess Twitter's trying to say that you can because they're heard some rumblings about them buying it. But I think that's why it was so big, was the timing of it. But for what it's trying to solve, that problem of online conferencing, it's very difficult to replicate a real in-person conference. So if you can get something that provides even something comparable, the applications for that is huge. So if they're able to achieve that, I think it can be very amazing, truthfully. And they've also, seemingly like they're trying to make it very creator focused, where they just integrated monetization there. And it seems like they don't even take a percentage of that monetization, which is pretty crazy for right now. And so I think there is potential applications. I'll be very curious to see how this performs in a COVID-free world, if that ever exists, which, knock on wood, hopefully it does. But I'd be very interested to see how it is then.
Have you spent a lot of time in Clubhouse?
So I did early on. I was spending all kinds of time, but I think that is one of the drawbacks of the opportunity that is Clubhouse. It's very easy to convince yourself that you're being productive with your time just because you're on Clubhouse. And it can become a major, major time suck where you look up and you've just been on there for an hour or 2 hours. And if you were to look at it critically, you didn't really come away with too much, especially if you're not being very thoughtful and conscious about what rooms you're spending time in and what you're trying to get from those rooms when you're spending time in them. So I spend far less time now. And when I do, it's very calculated in terms of how long I'm going to spend on there and what I'm trying to do with that time. Whereas before, early on, I was just spending a ton of time. I was kind of caught up in the hype and just spending all sorts of time on there.
When you were in Clubhouse, were you there as a speaker or a listener? Was it kind of a mix?
I'd say about 90% on stage and then 10% in rooms where I was just actively trying to learn or hear from someone in particular speaking.
So when you're a listener, would you say that there's pretty good value there, though?
There is, but I think it also can become a trap, too, because you could listen forever. And I think that is kind of the detriment of social media and even the content that I make. Like, you could watch my content for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. And if you don't put it into practice, what has it been for? Right? Like, you may as well have been watching something that's been strictly entertainment. I think a lot of people become obsessed with learning, and that's great to a point, but it's so much more practical when you actually put it into motion and take something from it. So even when you're listening, I think there can be a ton of value there, but it's very easy to just keep listening. And then in a week later, when I talk to the same person, they're still asking the same questions because they haven't actually tried.
Right. I just feel like this is how it is for YouTube and everywhere, but I feel like the listeners get a tremendous amount of value in Clubhouse considering the types of names we're seeing in there right now versus those folks who are spending the time. I don't know what they're coming away with. Kind of like you said, like you spend all this time as a speaker and then you leave and you're like, I don't know what I got out of that necessarily. I got a lot of goodwill, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that was the coolest thing for me. It was actually, like, I was on a stage with Rob one time, and it was because I had seen so many of his videos, so that was very, very cool to connect with people like that. But you're absolutely right. From someone who's speaking on stage, I think you really have to look at what you're getting out of it and try to optimize the time for something that you're trying to pull from it. And ideally, that's something that you could be tracking to see that if you're actually putting in the time, if you're getting out a means to just justify that. I'd say I definitely turned down the Clubhouse time that I was spending because early on it was a lot of time. And I did see some returns from that in terms of growing on other platforms, mostly Instagram and Twitter, because you could connect those to them. There was a lot of carryover from there, but very little to YouTube because there was more friction where they had to kind of actually look for me.
Right. That makes sense. The Twitter and Instagram connection there too. I see people just connecting Instagram. But yeah, I would imagine that's, if people are willing to go find you, that's a pretty big draw, which is nice. There's no, for anyone who doesn't know about Clubhouse, there's no text either. So you can't DM people privately. It's all voice 100%. So that's the nice thing about Instagram is you can connect later, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's been a near must. Like, I got tons of DMs from people going to Instagram simply because they had to, which is kind of funny that I assume that Clubhouse will eventually integrate DMs because that seems like lost time on the platform, but we'll see.
Right. If I were Clubhouse, I'd want to keep everything in my house, exactly. So to speak. Sorry for the pun. But having people go somewhere else to have those outside conversations, I would want some kind of private texting ability, but who knows? They've been adding features, so I guess we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
So with regards to apps competing with it and things like that, obviously, like, these companies are seeing an opportunity here. What do you think the future is for this? Do you think people are going to, keep embracing this? Or do you think because of the lockdowns and everything that right now it's working really well, but, once everyone's going back into the world, we'll see?
So I don't think you'll ever be able to fully replicate in human interaction, especially in something like a conference or anything like that. Like, you can't really duplicate that. But like I said before, if you can get something even remotely close or better, because I've been on online conferences and it's not even close to the impact that can be had. So if they can even create something close to that, I think there still is going to be application later just for maybe potentially more conferences, because I don't think, as long as people can actually go to in-person ones, I don't see them going away. But this could be a far cheaper alternative where people who are already putting on in-person ones, maybe they could now do an extra one or two a year or even more through something like this to make it more of a consistent thing. Because I know oftentimes with conferences, they only happen once a year. But in these spaces, a year is a very long time. So there'd be a ton of value in having these more frequently. So I could see it sticking around as long as they get the experience right, which it seems like they're actively trying to do.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I think there's a lot of potential there. Yeah, I suppose we'll see. I'm just really curious about it. Another thing it gets me curious about is just the emergence of a new social media platform in general. Like, it seems like, in the era of MySpace, it was around for a bit and then it was quickly overshadowed by all these other social platforms. And at the time, I thought the trend was going to be this, where we see a platform come on, it's popular for a couple of years, and then we see them die off and someone else takes their place. But Now we just have these platforms that have been around for so long, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and YouTube. However, Clubhouse comes in and they get really popular. There are other social media platforms that try to come up. What are your thoughts on a platform coming up and people taking some time to try and become an early adopter of it? Do you think that's a worthwhile endeavor?
Absolutely. If you have the means to do so, like I've seen people who have been fighting, scratching and clawing to try to build on Instagram and YouTube to no success or to very little. And they've just doubled down on Clubhouse. And now they're getting in conversations or opportunities that they previously didn't have. And they're also growing on the other platform. So there is so much to be said about being an early adopter. And you look at any platform, some of the biggest names are built early on. And I think that's even true for platforms that don't last as long. Like if you look at Vine, it was only the early movers because it didn't last long enough for anything else to really be there. But I think there's a tremendous value in that, as long as it's not coming at a cost to what you're doing elsewhere. Like I think diversification is important, but not at a sacrifice of what could be had elsewhere. Like if you are a YouTuber and that's what you're doing, you're killing it. Like I think it'd be silly to jump all in on Clubhouse, but I think there is a huge advantage if you're the other side of the coin. If you're someone who's really struggling to gain some traction, and if you can go in there and chip away at it there, then your time may be better spent. So I think it totally depends on your situation, but I've seen people have crazy opportunities there and really build brands really off the back of Clubhouse. So I think there is opportunity there. It totally depends on your situation though.
Is there an emergence of a new type of role in the social platform space? You know, we have creators on YouTube. You may also call them influencers. Well, let me just quickly ask you this side question, Ben. Do you know who Viper is?
Yes.
Okay, everybody knows who Viper is on Clubhouse in our universe because he is in every single Clubhouse room. And I think he's one of these people who've become synonymous with Clubhouse in terms of being, I guess, what's called a moderator or a person who helps run these Clubhouses and creates connections between people on stage, those who are listening in the audience. So, yeah, it's where people haven't necessarily found their niche in being a creator or influencer. Do you think these, I don't know what to call them, I don't know what the term is, moderator, but other like business connectors, middleman, I think that perhaps is too much of an old-fashioned term. Where am I going with this, Ben?
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I have an example in my immediate group where he did the exact same thing, where he's known for now being the Clubhouse guy. And even when he's on Clubhouse, he's not necessarily known for one specific thing. He's known for the guy who connects people to things. Not necessarily known for the one specific topic, but more rather the fact that he moderates the rooms and gets these panel experts or panel members together at one time. And I think there's a ton of value in doing that, but it depends what you build off of that. But I will say it can be very difficult. It does become almost like an insider's club. Whereas if you're not part of that, it becomes very, very difficult to get on stage unless you're going to go do that and build that elsewhere. Because I know when I used to be very active early on when Clubhouse, I'd get invited on almost every stage. But now that I've been gone for a while, that no longer happens. So it's people very quickly are getting replaced, essentially, or like the club is getting more and tighter and tighter. So I think if you're trying to break into somebody else's club, unless you are an expert in that topic, you may be better served trying to go find your other space or build your own kind of thing.
So maybe in 6 months' time, it's going to be called Clickhouse.
Yeah, maybe. Exactly. 100%.
It sounds like it's already becoming that in a way.
Yeah, a little bit like even because it is strange, the structure of it, where it's people are on stage and then everyone else is listening. Like even just that is a little different because of how people approach it. Like they take it like an intimate conversation, but it's anything but. So it'll be very interesting to see how that evolves and the recording functionality of that, too.
Right. I've definitely heard a lot of interesting conversations over there. I can definitely see the value in it. So it's just a space that I'm intently kind of watching, and we'll just kind of see what happens there. I want to shift gears real quick and discuss some YouTube-y topics, because I know you cover a lot of those types of topics on your channel as well. It's not all just about other platforms. And one of the topics that you covered a little while back was what you do if your YouTube channel stops growing. And I thought you could maybe speak that a little bit, because I think this is a problem we see all the time, where people, they get started on YouTube, they start seeing some growth, and then it just kind of stagnates. And I'd love to have you share some of your thoughts on that here.
100%. I think every YouTuber has hit that at one point or another. I think there are definitely a few things that you can do. I think you have to look at the kind of content you're creating, look at what's worked for you. And even I've been guilty of not doing enough of that just for creative reasons. But going back to what works is always going to help for the most part. And another tool that is massive is being very nimble in your creation process. So especially in an education field like mine, the ability to be first is going to help you out tremendously. And that was one of the major inflection points of my channel in general, was when things would happen with Instagram or YouTube even, I would just be the first one to make a video, even if it wasn't a high production value video. I just got it out first. And YouTube doesn't discriminate. If you have a video that people want and no one's made it before you, you're going to get those views. So I think that is a massive tool that you can do. And then I think another thing is trying to widen the scope of your content too, while still maintaining the true reason for why you exist and staying true to your audience, but trying to widen the scope in terms of making it more massively applicable. And that's something that I'm actively trying to do, to try to still stay true to the core about why people follow me, but then make it even a little bit more of a broad door that people may be interested in opening and hopefully coming into my world and then seeing the other kind of content as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense too. What are some of the big mistakes you kind of see creators making to that point?
Specific to when they hit a plateau or just on YouTube in general?
Well, yes, when they hit a plateau, like what I see a lot of people kind of scrambling, you know, like,
yes,
a lot of times they fall into the habit of, I'm just going to keep trying, like this will pick back up.
True. Yeah, no, that's a great point as well. I think a lot of people, they just get very, very defeated. And I think they instantly go to a place of panic, like YouTube hates my channel. And that's not true at all. And I think that even I've seen that myself, where it can be a slow lull and then I'll go back to the drawing board. I would just be like, well, those videos really weren't that good. You know what I mean? So I think it has a lot less to do with the platform, which a lot of people, that's the first place they go is, oh, YouTube hates this size creator, or YouTube hates me for this. And I think go back to the drawing board and being critical, but in a positive sense, like from an opportunity perspective, like how can I make this better? Not that you suck, but how can I make this even better? And going back to the drawing board and really being obsessed with who's watching this and how do I make it great for them. Because even on my channel, it was very slow for a few months. And then I had one video that was good and it changed everything and it picked things back up. So I think the content is the most important thing, and understanding the little pieces that you do have, the little tools that YouTube gives you to really make that the best package to be discovered, then enjoyed, and then hopefully enjoyed again or another video, and keeping them around. So I think getting back down to who it's for and really obsessing over minimal improvement over time and compounding that is what's going to make you lull proof, if you will, because even if you go through lulls, you can just go back to the drawing board. Okay, where can I improve? And then eventually you'll break through again.
Yeah, that's really great advice. And I think a lot of people kind of miss that critical eye in their own content. They struggle to, you know, look at it objectively and say, okay, what was working before? What can I do to kind of reinvigorate, you know, everything?
I have one more piece just on that topic too. So I think there are also things that people get instantly, they get very negative about things, but sometimes it's beyond your control. And I think it's very important to have a very macro view of where your channel's going and where it's been too. So there's instances where my channel, where if I were to just look at it through my analytics lens from the surface level, it would look like it's a bad month. But then if I go back the past year or 2 years, that month may just be historically bad for myself or my niche. So I think understanding that is very, very important too, so that you understand like what's really going on and how much of that is within your control and how much of it's not.
Yeah. It's hugely important to have that kind of perspective, I think, on your YouTube channel.
So I did have a question for you, Ben, and this is going to be a bit of a challenging one. If you remember in the Clubhouse conversation that we were having, it kind of follows on from that a little bit. Mm-hmm. The most popular content on your YouTube channel by far is Instagram education. Like if you sort by most popular, it's pretty much all Instagram. And yet you still do videos on other topics like YouTube, occasionally podcasting, et cetera, et cetera. And so what the general advice would be is stick to a certain niche. It's almost like if you're the equivalent gamer, you're jumping from a first person shooter to a wrestling game or to a soccer game or something like that. So I just want to understand why you are covering all aspects of social media as opposed to maybe just making this an Instagram focused YouTube education, Instagram education YouTube channel.
Yeah, and that's a great question. And it was a great question when you asked it in the Clubhouse thing, and same is true now. And from a simple growth perspective, I probably would be better served to just serve Instagram from one. And then also definitely from a financial point of view, if I were to just focus on Instagram from like affiliate offers, like offers within my business, all that stuff, that'd probably be more fruitful. But I'm genuinely interested in all the platforms at large. And I know that if I were to just make one form of content, then that would, like, I would get bored of that. One, and two,
yeah,
I believe I'm a huge believer in Instagram, but I didn't want to tie myself to a ship that I couldn't control. And I that was a big thing, whereas I didn't want to have no opportunity to go elsewhere and veer off. If, say, Instagram in 5 years doesn't exist, hypothetically, I didn't want to be known as the Instagram guy and the Instagram no longer exists. So if I were to just turn that channel into an Instagram channel, that would be something that I could definitely do. But I know creatively, I definitely would want to have to build up another entity. And I figure I would just keep it all in one place. Again, for the channel itself, it's probably not the right decision. But I do that understanding that I'm probably leaving something on the table. But I feel like I take things from it elsewhere, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's, you're essentially saying that you are following you are practicing what you preach, in that you know that Instagram feeds your channel, but you're self-aware that it can't just be all Instagram all of the time, because Ben Levitt isn't Instagram all of the time. You are more than the sum of that single part. And I guess as long as creators are aware of that, that they are masters of their own destiny, and you're clearly accepting the direction that your channel is going in. And I think, as you rightly pointed out, pitching your flag in one tent long-term is a very risky game. And I think it goes back to the first question, in that it's good to build an audience on one social platform, but there is a point where you want to try and not just be the Instagram guy or the YouTube creator. You want to be, I guess, Gary V. You know, Gary V is not a master on any social media platform specifically. He is a master of social media, full stop.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not saying I'm trying to be Gary Vee or anything of that sort, but absolutely, I think the approach is 100% right. You got it spot on there. I didn't want to be just the Instagram guy, because I've also seen channels that were Instagram guys during the heyday of Instagram, and times were very, very good. But Instagram's not what it was in terms of mass popularity or creators trying to flood that space with the same level of intensity that it was like 3 or 4 years ago. So I saw that, and I saw that a lot of those channels either have disappeared or stop creating content. And I didn't want the same fate. I wanted this to be a long-term thing. And I'm passionate about social media at large and the opportunities that it creates for people. And I think that's really the core root of why my channel exists, is to help people do that wherever they feel that it's best fit for them. So I didn't want to alienate the people why I started the whole thing.
That makes a lot of sense. We tell creators all the time on YouTube that it's important to niche down. It's important to stay focused. But the thing that kind of trips us up is these are smaller channels. There are channels in different stages of their journey. And as Rob pointed out, your channel is about Instagram, but there's other things going on. In general, though, what kind of advice would you give to creators who feel like they're reaching that point that you kind of felt at one point or another? Like, when's the right time to niche out, and what's the right way to do that?
So I think if you're really early on, there's two approaches that you can take with growing on YouTube, and I think one's way better than the other, but I didn't do the one that is better. So what I did when I was early on is I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. So I started making videos on things that I knew would be helpful, that I was also passionate about, so that if they did go well, I would be fine if that was the niche that I went down. So I think that's a solid route to do if you don't know. I do think that a better route is understanding what you want to do and then doing it. But that is an opportunity if you don't have the luxury of knowing exactly what you want to do. If you do know your niche, I think the more niche that you can be, especially in the beginning, is going to give you a huge advantage just from viewer retention and keeping people around. And I also would say, don't view a niche as a box per se, because I think there are people who are living, breathing proof that a niche is what allowed them to then branch out. So I think becoming a point of value is not a negative thing. It's, in fact, it's a positive. So if you are a very multifaceted person, that's fantastic. But if you try to share it all at once, people won't know which thing to connect to, and they won't connect to anything. So I think giving them an opportunity to really provide value and then get to know and love you allows you to do a lot of things with it. And I think you can see examples of that with people like Graham Stephan. There's a few other examples where they started off in a pretty specific niche, but then just simply through sharing their content in that niche in a very specific way, custom to them and their personality, allowed them to touch far more broad reaching topics and build the channel into great successes too.
Right. It's just so important not to, again, like I said earlier, pull focus, and that goes for other social media platforms, but on your own YouTube channel as well. And it's really, really easy to do because as people, we all have different passions. And I've been telling people, my advice to people has basically been, hey, if you're going to get interested in other things and you want to bring that to your audience, maybe one, you have to put on a separate channel, especially if it's really different from what you normally do, or two, keep it for you. You know, make that the thing you do to unwind after like a long day of content creation.
And that's valuable too, because not everything has to be something that you share on YouTube or social media from a true content perspective. Maybe it's just something that you have in there as an accent piece. Like I have this Jacksonville Jaguars painting, for example, and that's my favorite football team. And I don't ever talk about the Jaguars on my channel because it's totally unrelated to social media. But by simply having that there, I've gotten so many people commenting saying, go Jags, or like the Jags suck, getting that conversation started. So simple little things as that, like that's not something I'm pushing on my channel because I know that would be counterproductive. But that simple piece allows people to connect with me more knowing that I'm a football fan as well.
Right. I could see that too being slightly distracting, but if it gets engagement going, what's nothing wrong with that, I suppose. What are your plans kind of going forward? I know you said that Instagram isn't quite what it used to be. I'm sure you've given some thought to, the future of Ben Levitt.
Yeah. So I think from on YouTube specifically, I'll still make content on Instagram because I see that it's dwindling from the creator's perspective, but I would say it's skewing more on the business perspective. So I think that there's going to be still a huge need for it for businesses, small, medium, and large, just because of what it allows you to do. Like I mentioned earlier, TikTok's fantastic in terms of growing an audience quickly, but your touch points that you have with that audience are awful. Like some people can follow you and they've never even been to your profile. Sometimes they may have never even seen your content again. So I think from that perspective, the business applications from Instagram and turn Facebook are not going to go away. So I think that's will still be a big focus of my channel. And I think as it continues to evolve towards that, I'll probably focus more and more on appealing to businesses within my Instagram content. And then beyond that, I definitely want to make more content about YouTube specifically, because a lot of people know me as the Instagram guy, but a bigger portion of my actual business is far more YouTube centric. So we'd definitely like to share more of that. And I think it's only going to take one or two right videos to have more of an audience from that perspective. But I think it'll be more of the same, to be honest, but just trying to get better at what I share for sure.
Ben, I want to do a quick fire round with you now.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you a social media platform, and I just want your three gut instincts factors. For example, if I said YouTube, my response would be channel focus, target audience, thumbnails as important facets. So Instagram.
1%. And what I mean by that is you need to be in the 1% of content. It is so saturated that at this point it is completely authority driven. So if you're not in that 1% of content creators from like the content piece, you're not going to have what it takes to get to that point of growing. And that's because the authority driven is probably the second one. And that's because it is so hard to get to about like 3,000 or 4,000 followers. But once you get past that number, it becomes a lot easier to grow because of the fact that you now have a lot more trust within that platform. And then consistency is another huge piece too. Those would be the three biggest things. If you're not willing to do those things, Instagram's probably not the best place for you. Maybe you just have it as a touch point for your core fans. But if you're looking to actively grow, the 1% is massive in terms of really standing out, and then really building that authority and trust within Instagram, and then doing so consistently is going to be the three biggest things that you're going to need for Instagram growth.
TikTok.
TikTok's going to be volume. So you're going to need to be posting a lot. If you're looking to grow, I think that a lot of people say like, oh, you don't need a niche over there. And that's true. You can get very consistent views without having a niche. But the more specific you are within your focus, that's going to retain a lot more followers. Because if they do come through and visit your profile, if you are a specific reason or purpose for that page existing, it's going to convert so much better. And then ironically, the third thing would be having a way of funneling the TikTok followers to other platforms, because TikTok is so great because of the fact that they don't give you much control over your audience. TikTok has control over your audience. So you need to be able to build that connection with them and get them onto other channels where you do have more authority. So those would be the big three things that I would focus on for TikTok.
And since we're doing one of these right now, podcast.
Podcasting, I would say the first thing is if you're not incorporating video, I would do so ASAP, just because of what it allows you to do. Two, to be patience would be a massive thing there, because it is a far more of a slow burn. And when why I think video and patience really tie in well together, because one of the fundamental flaws of podcasting is discovery. That's something that they haven't really figured out yet. So it does become very difficult and very daunting for people to actually build an audience there. And they get very discouraged very quickly when they see how few people are listening. Whereas other platforms like YouTube and TikTok, discovery is less of a problem there. It's definitely still competitive, but there is discovery to be had. So by having that video, it allows you to complement your existing podcast in the areas where podcast currently lacks, because you now have video. And the third piece would be, it's got to be something you're passionate about, because of the fact that it is a slow burn. If you're not deeply passionate about this, you're likely not going to have what it takes to actually grow a successful show, unless you already have an existing audience somewhere else.
Thank you for the longest quickfire round I think we've ever had.
Sorry about that.
A lot of great stuff in there, though. I wanted to jump on the podcasting thing a little bit. You said to incorporate video. What's the best way to do that? Because, I mean, this podcast runs about 45 minutes to an hour, and we know that having a YouTube channel where you just post 45 minute to an hour videos, I've seen people try it. It doesn't go too well. What are your strategies for that?
So I think the clips are going to be your biggest friend for sure. I think that's going to be the biggest thing. Even if you don't have a highly influential guest, you can touch topics that are highly influential or really go after some borrowed leveraged attention from things that are going on currently or things that are very pressing within your niche. And then the clips are things that you can then repurpose to find attention on TikTok and on YouTube.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too, because I've seen the couple channels I do follow that have a podcast, they put the whole thing on their channel, but then they will also take different segments and break those up into smaller, more searchable videos. So yeah, I completely agree with you. But I think when you say, oh, yeah, be, you know, incorporating video in your podcasting strategy, I think that people just take that and go, oh, sure, yeah, I can make this a video and put it on YouTube, no problem.
Yeah, no, it's far more nuanced than that. That's great that you brought that up, actually. So like, why the clips work so well is because of the fact that they're each its own tailored little video. And also, it's very difficult for someone who doesn't know you to commit to a 45-minute podcast. It's unlikely that's going to happen, especially on YouTube. But people will sign up to watch a 3 or 4 minute video, and then they'll watch another, and then another, and then another, and then they're watching your full length podcast. So that's why it works so well, and that's why I'm a huge believer and advocate of getting video as soon as you can.
And let's drop in a little tip here, Dan. We are using StreamYard to record not only the audio for this, but also the video. I think there are free tiers for this, and this is not sponsored. This is just something we really like to use. The only problem is sometimes the video on our guest freezes, as Dan has been frozen for the last half an hour. But you probably won't see this because we're not going to use this. Sorry, Ben's frozen. I do apologize now.
Well, Ben, any final thoughts on YouTube? Any final thoughts for anyone who's trying to grow, no matter where they are?
So if it's YouTube specifically, then I think just the refinement's going to be massive. And if it's other platforms, I think just getting started is huge. I think a lot of people say, like, oh, I could do that, or I could be here. Okay, then you got to start to actually get there. And however that starts, however ugly or not polished it is, that's the first step. And it's not going to look the same in a year from now. And you're going to look back on even your content that you make now in a year from now and think the same thing. So just get started and continue to refine and fail quickly and learn.
Ben, I've got a question for you here. So I'm going to give you a choice here. Two extremes. It's your first month on YouTube. Would you make a single high quality as best as you can possibly make it video in that first month? Or would you make a video every single day for that first month?
If I'm new to YouTube, I'm making one every single day, because I think that even what you think you could make as would be the best, it'd probably be you obsessing, and you'd actually be farther along in that 30th video than you would have been trying to obsess the whole month over one.
Quantity over quality. Although there's a lot of arguments in between like that. I'm giving you a very extreme example. And I think, to be honest, it's going to be somewhere in between, isn't it? Where you may be able to make 4 videos in a month, but actually maybe you want to make, you know, 6 or 8 or something. Just push that quantity a little bit more to learn from your mistakes.
100%. That's the most important thing, is the fact that you figure out what you don't know along the way. And that's the most valuable piece of doing this. It's not necessarily that these videos are even going to be the ones that are going to be discovered, but they're going to allow you to have the skills to make those videos that do get discovered, make them awesome and keep people around.
Well, the core to that advice too is, yeah, just don't get hung up on stuff. And it's really easy to do, because you see the people we follow on YouTube, the people who've been around a while, just have this amazing quality. And so you take the tools you have and you try and replicate that. And then you end up banging your head against your desk because you're just trying to get a video done and you're obsessing over every last detail. And that's very unnecessary when you're first starting out.
Yeah. And I think that people are very open to people just being themselves, because even on YouTube, where a place that is, there's a lot of freedom of expression, it's still very, very rare. So don't, I would say one of the worst things you can do is try to create like somebody else, because that person is already winning because they're like that. And if you're not genuinely like that, it's not going to serve you well, because even if you do find success, if you're being someone who you're not continuously, that's very taxing. So I think the best thing that you can do is just feel yourself out on camera, like in terms of do this until you're comfortable. And eventually you're going to find your voice and your sound, and that's going to be your creation style and be exactly why people do like you.
Right. Well, Ben, thank you so much for doing the podcast with us. Where can people find you?
Absolutely. First of all, thanks for having me on, guys. It was awesome chatting up both of you. You can find me over on YouTube, just Ben Levitt. Instagram is the same, with an underscore at the end. And then my podcast, where we talk about social media, is just Social Media University. And you can find that on any podcast player.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And we'll have to do this again.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tube Talk, brought to you by VidIQ. Head over to vidIQ.com/tubetalk for today's show notes and previous episodes. Enjoy the rest of your video making day.